But because of the change in reporting mechanisms, because of the change in structure and support, we've actually been able to increase the number of service offerings to our older people by simply changing the way we work.
Welcome to the Aged Care Executive Podcast, the show that's dedicated to helping age and community care professionals stay ahead of the industry.
Welcome to another episode of the Aged Care Executive Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Peachy, Executive Director of WNL Mobile Healthcare Services. And today we're lucky enough to be joined by Shiva Gopalan from Warragul Aged Care. Warragul was recently named by Aged and Community Services Australia as the National Aged Care Provider of the Year. In this interview, Shiva lets us know what are the main things that sets their organisation apart. You'll hear how a focus on staff is what ultimately leads to better organisational performance, as well as the top things their organisation focuses on to excel in the areas of workforce culture, innovation, communication, and general excellence to the aged care sector. We also hear about some exciting innovations that their organisation is working on, which I'm sure you'll find pretty interesting. So, without further ado, here is Shiva from Warragul Aged Care. Shiva, welcome to the Aged Care Executive Podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Now, first of all, congratulations on your award. That's a massive achievement. For the people that haven't heard of Warragul before, can you start by giving a bit of an overview of the organisation, you know, how big it is, the size, where you guys are, etc.?
Yeah, sure. So Warragul is a regional not-for-profit aged care provider. We're providing services mainly in the Illawarra and Southern Highlands. So what we do as an organisation is we provide a spectrum of aged care services from community services to villages and service departments, but we also operate 8 residential care homes. We have around 1,000 staff. We have more than 350 volunteers, and we're quite proud to remain volunteer-run and community-owned. What I'm quite proud of is Warragul has stayed true to its roots, that we started as a small volunteer-run aged care provider on the top of Mount Warragul in the Illawarra, and very proud that a local regional provider has been able to, 50 years later, remain that way and remain true to those values and, in fact, win such a prestigious award.
Yeah, wonderful. And I guess we'll come back to your location and stuff a little bit later, but I guess I'm really interested in the award itself. Can you tell us a little bit about the award? So, for example, the criteria, how you're measured against other organisations, etc.?
Yeah, so from my understanding of the award process, or in fact, I'll tell you what the award was itself. So the award was presented at the Asian Community Services Australia National Summit, so the ACSA Summit, and the award was for National Aged Care Provider of the Year. So what happens is you apply for the award against a selection criteria, and it starts with at a state level. So we won the New South Wales state level, and then as award winners, our application was then sent to the national forum for judging in that sense. So some of the key criteria that we were judged against were things like workforce culture, innovation, communication, and I guess general excellence to the aged care sector.
Okay, excellent. Now, one of the interesting things there was you mentioned about workforce. Being in the Illawarra region, and you mentioned over 1,000 staff there, how do you guys generally go with attracting and retaining staff in what I imagine is a fairly tight employment market in that area?
Absolutely. I think the aged care workforce in general is something that across all of Australia, people always are expressing concerns and struggles about attracting and retaining staff. So one of the key things that Warragul has been working on is an intentional culture. So we work on an intentional organizational culture where we believe that there's three key signature behaviors that we feel if the staff are demonstrating this culture, that it's going to have an impact on bottom line results, but also it's going to support the organization in interacting better between people, enjoying being at work. We try and create an environment where we're having fun with our residents and our customers, and obviously provide a sense of giving back. And I think it seems to be working quite well. Like all aged care providers, we still have challenges with attraction and retention, but we've made a lot of great conscious efforts towards closing those gaps.
Oh, that sounds a wonderful thing to do. And I guess one of the great things about signature behaviours as opposed to just having a culture statement is it provides more of a how-to and a list of specific things that staff should and shouldn't be doing.
That's exactly right. So one of the things we actually do is with those signature behaviours is we've actually got we do this by statements. So we've got a signature behaviour. So that's a behaviour that Warragul feels is going to add value to the organisation and to our residents, our customers. And we've actually got groups of, because they're the same signature behaviours across the whole organisation, so whether it be community, village, residential, whether they work in admin, in accounts, everyone's got the same three key signature behaviours that we feel will add value. So what each team has worked on is creating these "we do this by" statements. So those statements are the teams expressing how they actually demonstrate those behaviours, and it kind of has shown and demonstrated the impact that it has on the overall business results, but also on the impact on the organisation culture between staff as well.
Right. And I guess one of the key reasons behind this podcast is about showcasing what organisations and people in the industry are doing well. And it's about sharing these ideas to basically, you know, use that whole analogy that a rising tide lifts all boats. Are those signature behaviours readily available and those statements of intent?
It's something that we've definitely portrayed across the organisation. It's in those three key signature behaviours are within our – it's incorporated into the way we interview staff. So part of our selection criteria is whether or not we felt that in the way they were talking and what they were saying would actually positively demonstrate those key behaviours. So it's actually become quite integrated into the way we are. So in saying that, so it's something that during our staff meetings, we recognise people. So if someone has been positively demonstrating a behaviour, we actually recognise them in staff meetings. We've got what we call spotted cards. So if any staff member can recognise any other staff member. So if I see a staff member doing something particularly great that I feel is demonstrating one of the key signature behaviours, I can write that up as a spotted card and put it up in the staff room so that all staff can see that this person is being recognised and noticed for demonstrating those behaviours. So the idea behind that is, I guess, to positively embed these signature behaviours and get people doing it to a point where it's just the way we are and who we are as an organisation.
Wonderful. And on top of the signature behaviours and driving that workforce culture, which, you know, impacts both the bottom line but also the care for the residents and the organisation as a whole, what are the other, you know, top 3 to 5 things that your organisation is focused on to become, you know, the National Aged Care Provider of the Year?
Absolutely. I think the culture aspect of things, we have a really simple but clear vision statement. And that vision statement is that older people will have great lives. It's really simple. It's something that all staff can align to. And when we're making decisions, when we're sitting at management team meetings, if we're thinking about in staff meetings, we always bring it back. And I think that simple aspect of having something so clear that anyone at any level in the organisation can think about our vision and it's constantly talked about amongst staff. It's reinforced in staff meetings, and we always bring back our decisions towards, once again, those three key signature behaviours and our vision. I guess over time, what we've found is that there has been a direct correlation between positive workplace culture and achieving our business results or our bottom line results. So we can actually demonstrate through, so what we do is we run a 360-degree survey process three times a year, but there's also survey processes for executive, for our board members, for our management team. And those measurements actually, as our positive demonstration of our signature behaviors go up, there's actually been a direct correlation to our level of occupancy, our decreasing of falls rates. It's had a positive impact on a number of our business measures. So it's really made a huge impact. And I think being able to demonstrate that and portray that is part of the reason why we were able to win this award.
I can see how linking these behaviours to the culture can also drive innovation. Can you tell us a little bit about how, in particular, you excelled in that category?
So I think as an organisation, we have a huge focus on innovation. We've actually got an executive manager who's in charge of innovation for the organisation and who's very good at outside-the-box thinking. But innovation is not just that person's responsibility. It's weaved in through the whole organisation. So we've got, and it's promoted at all levels. So we've got a very strong continuous improvement focus. So in terms of an example of that might be that we've recently had a new facility open, which is Shell Cove. And throughout the journey of creating this beautiful site, we've actually involved older people in the co-design of this project. So, for example, when it came to choosing the chairs that would be in the living environment at Shell Cove, some of the village residents that have actually had actually already put in deposits and were allocated their village residence at that location, over the period of while the build was still happening, they were brought together in small communities and for networking events so that they knew when they came in, they already knew the people they were moving in with. So we kind of created that beautiful atmosphere for them to come into this home and actually already know who their neighbours were, already know who was going to live in this community. But on top of that, they were involved in some of the decision-making around colour schemes, carpets, around choosing some of the chairs that were actually going to be in the communal home space that they would have. So it's been really great, and we've had such a positive reaction and feedback as a result of them being involved throughout the journey and throughout that process. And now that they've been living there for over 12 months now, you can see how it's created this really gelled community, and it's been really humbling to be a part of that.
Wonderful. And I think one of the key take-homes from that is it's not just about providing good care, but it's also about creating a community and a home-like environment that the potential care recipients aren't just moving into out of, you know, a need, but they're also at the point where they're wanting to get into that community. So I can imagine that people want to be a part of that.
Absolutely. And showed definitely through the fact that before the commissioning was complete, before the site was opened, we had a huge waiting list and we had a large number of people ready to put deposits down. Location was good, environment was good, the communication that occurred in the lead up was really positive as well. So a lot of people were really willing and wanting to live and work in that location.
When you mentioned the award criteria, obviously what we've covered so far gives a really great insight into both workforce, communication, and also innovation. That fourth category, the general side of things, what was that involved?
So the fourth category was around general excellence in the aged care sector. So I guess when thinking about general excellence in the aged care sector, it came down to us showcasing some of the wonderful key things that we have done in the lead up to applying for the award. One of the key things that I felt was a part of this was the lifestyle focus. So there was a huge focus on resident lifestyle at Warragul, and that's been partly due to a recent organisational restructure. So that restructure occurred just over 2.5 years ago, and that involved both the lifestyle teams. So in other locations, they call them REOs or recreational activities officers, but also the physiotherapy or wellness teams. They actually all have been structured into a team in themselves that no longer report directly to their individual site management. So instead, they report centrally through to myself, which is as the wellness and lifestyle manager for Warragul. Part of the reasons behind those changes was, number one, it came down to the site managers have so much going on in terms of reporting and responsibilities that sometimes lifestyle didn't take as much of a focus because they didn't have as much time, because there were so much things going on from a care perspective that lifestyle kind of was left to the lifestyle team to run the way that they wanted to. So by having a centralized approach, we've actually created teams where we've got opportunities for progression. So there's team leaders and there's coordinators within that structure now, where lifestyle team members can see that there's opportunities for them to progress over time. But also it means that there's a lot better support. So that means that if there's issues, if there's things that they're struggling with, that there's always a support mechanisms and there's multiple tiers of support. So if the team leader's away, sick or absent, they can always go to the coordinator. If the coordinator's away, then they come to myself. So there's a tiered approach of support. But also there's been a lot more of a focus on collaboration. So sharing resources between teams, between facilities, also sharing of ideas, bringing them all together for education as well. So by having this lifestyle team and providing them with more of a focus, more education, but also more accountability. So we've actually got accountability mechanisms where we're actually looking at reporting and increased reporting and try to reduce some of the paperwork where possible. We've actually been able to increase the number of activities that we've been able to provide at almost all of our sites by a large number without any additional resourcing. So same cost, but because of the change in reporting mechanisms, because of the change in structure and support, we've actually been able to increase the number of service offerings to our older people by simply changing the way we work. The other aspect of that is the wellness team. So this is predominantly physio-based. So we do have physiotherapists and OTs. And having the clinical skills and expertise of our physiotherapists and occupational therapists on site is a huge privilege, I think, to have these skilled clinicians to provide support to each site. But what I found is to be able to support them to integrate or work with the lifestyle team in achieving more active living outcomes has been a really great benefit to the organisation as well. So we've got our wellness teams and lifestyle teams meeting and working together on collaboratively on calendars to improve the amount of walking activities. We've got exercise-based intervention, but also with the clinical skills, we're getting better guidance on improving the access and knowledge base around things like sensory therapy. So it's really great to have that clinical lens. The lifestyle team's not necessarily reporting to the wellness team, but there's definitely a lot more communication happening, which is really great to achieve really some great outcomes for our older people.
And I guess those points, really reflect some of the comments in the interview that we had a few episodes ago with Dr. Katrina Radford, talking about why staff in the aged care sector really stay and leave. And, you know, it wasn't about the pay, it was about that communication and support and being able to work as a team and, you know, develop that bond with the residents. So I can see how, you know, adopting that model led to, you know, it leads to a better workforce, degree of happiness, but also better outcomes for the residents, which you guys are demonstrating is leading to better occupancy rates as well.
Absolutely. And it certainly has led to some really great achievements, not just from occupancy perspective, but also staff retention, because they can see the opportunity for progression.
Wonderful. Now, sounds like for an organisation that's been around for 50 years, you guys are always up to something. You're always changing, you're always innovating and coming up some really good ways to keep ahead of the industry. Do you guys have anything else that's exciting or new initiatives that are coming up in the future?
Yeah, so I guess, so one of them, in the AXA Summit this year, we had a wonderful presenter called Dr. Jordan Nguyen, who talked about the emergence of technology, well, not so much the emergence, but the fact that technology can really make improvements and make work more efficient, but also look at the potential of the use of technology in the future in aged care. So he highlighted a few key points, which I won't go into, but it reinforced the fact that we are, Warragul as an organisation, is really thinking about using technology-based innovation as well. And one of the key things that we've been doing with our residents is virtual reality. So we worked with, we've been using virtual reality for about a year, maybe 2 years now, and we were early adopters, and we've been trying to achieve some really great things, and we've made some really simple wins. So on an individual one-on-one basis, we've been using virtual reality to support older people to achieve things that they haven't been able to achieve before. So for example, we may have older people which have never left New South Wales or never left Australia before. So through the use of virtual reality, we've been able to support them to go on virtual tours of Italy. So you might be sitting in a gondola and going through Venice and be able to look around and see the sights and sounds of as if you were in Venice. We've been able to support people to go on roller coasters, stand on top of mountains. We've been able to support people that are from overseas that haven't been to their hometown in many years but may not be physically able to travel. We've been able to utilize Google Earth so that they can actually do some virtual tours of some of their old neighborhoods, which has been really quite exciting for them. The future of the technology, I think there's a lot of potential there. And I think what we're trying to do is just make sure, one of the hardest things is making sure that our staff have the skills and expertise to be able to use that technology. I think that's been one of the key barriers of technology adoption by staff. But we've been able to coach and have education processes to really support them in order to engage and use this technology better. But also, initially, there was a lot of fear from the older person about using this technology just because it was the unknown. But once we coached them through, we explained how it works, what it does, a majority of the older people that did try actually wanted to keep coming back and really enjoyed that new experience.
So when you've been using that, I can see the immediate benefits to that from a lifestyle perspective and making residents, you know, just extremely happy, and it'd be an exciting thing to do. Have you identified any downstream effects to do with things like levels of motivation to participate in their ADLs or reductions in behaviours or anything along those lines, any of the more clinical measures?
Yes, actually, we our physio team actually used virtual reality. And one of the purposes of them using it was to identify whether it had a positive effect on reducing pain. So they did some case studies on a number of residents, and the outcome from what we did was anecdotally we got a lot of great feedback on pain reduction, or I think the secondary benefit was we had a lot more adherence to programs. So they wanted to come in, those that were in the groups that were doing virtual reality and exercise intervention, their attendance rates were much better. But as well as that, we were able to utilize virtual reality for treatment in terms of getting people to do more around their neck range of motion, to look up, look down, you know, utilize their body to hold on to someone and walk around to see what's happening in the environment while they were supported. So in terms of measured outcomes, the data that we had was definitely tracked downwards, but the groups that we had that didn't use virtual reality also tracked downwards. So we can't confirm that it was the exercise intervention that came along with it or the virtual reality itself. But it definitely was a motivational tool that got people wanting to attend and wanting to come and do exercise more.
Lovely. Now, I think the academics and the audience will probably kill me when I say that, you know, the plural of anecdote is data. So, I mean, you've got to have a number of anecdotes before you worry about the formal research. So that's all good. And you mentioned there was a second initiative as well?
Yes. So we've got another initiative that we've recently been working on. And this initiative is called My Club Connect. So My Club Connect is the brainchild of one of our managers called Eddie Boyle. He came up with the concept of adopting a university club-style model, which facilitates connections for older people. So the way this occurs is an older person might have a particular interest, and that person or people with similar interests can be brought together and they can form a club. So we may provide some sort of seed funding or facilitate the beginnings of the club, and then we encourage someone from that group to take over and actually be the key contact and kind of continue the facilitation of that club. In order to continue that club, they'll have to continue to do, you know, membership drives or self-fundraising or anything or something like that in order to continue for the club to continue to be successful. So some of the clubs that we've been able to facilitate include book clubs, a baby boomers brewing club, companionship for the young at heart, computer clubs, family history clubs, eventful tours, things like that. But basically what we're trying to do is create a portal in order to facilitate older people to connect with each other.
So if someone wanted to follow along and keep updated as these innovations develop, where can someone find you guys?
So I think the best way to find us is through the Warragul website. There's constantly blogs going up on the Warragul website, but also you can subscribe to our Facebook page, and there's regular updates coming from our marketing team on there about the wonderful things that are happening there.
Wonderful. Now, I'll link to both of those in the show notes. Just want to say thank you very much, Shiva. I think one of the great things about this is there's some big, hairy, audacious goals that an organisation could have to, you know, become the National Aged Care Provider of the Year. But some of the things that you've gone through here, you know, for example, the signature behaviours don't require a massive restructure, or they don't require, you know, overly significant investment in time, resources or money. So hopefully people who are listening can get a takeaway or two from this one. So yeah, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to the Aged Care Executive Podcast. What drives us is knowing that we're providing content to help aged and community care professionals stay ahead of the industry. So please, if you get any value from what we're doing, the biggest reward we could ask is that you share this podcast with your colleagues. Don't forget to hit subscribe. It's free. And also leave us a review. 5 stars, hopefully, but if not, that's okay. But please, leave a comment and let us know what we can do better, or if there's any particular topics you'd like to hear about. If you'd like to connect with us or have any questions, you can find us on LinkedIn and Facebook at the Aged Care Executive Podcast.